I told my wife last night, I said, I hope our kids don't go to college and never have a job. I would feel like a successful parent. And I think the difference is
If they're sitting at home on your couch eating Captain Crunch all day, you're not going to feel like a
smoking
successful
weed.
parent.
Yeah, right.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Dave and I are really excited to bring on Jordan Gall today. Jordan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is an exciting topic for us to be talking about today. I think, Dave, what should we call this episode? We'll call it Leaving Your High Income Day Job.
That feels a little bland. I think it's diving off into the deep end without a life jacket, right?
That's right.
Because that's what it feels like. So for those of you that aren't familiar, we'll get into Jordan's story here in a minute. But I'd say probably the one thing that freaks almost every entrepreneur I've ever talked to about is trying to get out of your current job, especially if you have golden handcuffs on. So you've got a nice, highly paid consulting job, and then you're like, okay, well, I want to build this business, and now how do I get off this crazy gravy train that I'm on here? And oh my God, what am I going to do? And it's scary as hell. And I'll tell you, it's probably one of the greatest fears that I have. I know I've talked directly with other entrepreneurs and I've heard the exact same things. And so let's kind of jump right in here, Jordan, and talk a little bit about kind of what was life before Carthook here and then what happened.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's the transition that's really scary. And it's what this makes me think of, you know, that movie with Gwyneth Paltrow called Sliding Doors, where it's like an alternate universe type thing. There's probably a much cooler movie that has the same analogy, but I'm like 35 with two kids, and that's the movie that comes to mind. But whatever path you go, you're always looking off into the other side of the alternate reality that you could be on, and you're glorifying it, and you look, oh, if I was just doing that, if I had stayed at my job, things would be easier. If I had left my job sooner, I'd have my own business. So you kind of have to deal with being in the reality you're in that's real with the pros and the cons, and then looking over into the alternate universe of what things would be like if you had stayed on a different track or had gone a different way. And you have to kind of live with that. So yeah, part of the decision for me was always, which one am I going to be – it's going to be easier to live with, that I'll have less regret and will be happier even if there are ups and downs in it. So yeah, it's something I think about a lot, and I think the reason for that is the background. Where were we? You want me to kind of start off where?
Sure.
Yeah, give everyone kind of your Superman story. Like, where, you know, you are the founder of Carthook, which is an e-commerce solution to help people with abandoned carts in their online shopping. But you know, I know just from listening to your podcast Bootstrap Web that you had a background in investment banking. How'd you end up there, and then what was the impetus to really start making the jump?
Yes, so it's been a long meandering road for I guess like 12 or 13 years at this point. Out of school, I went to University of Michigan Business School, which was great, but the problem there is that it really limited your thinking, right? It's a big school, and they care about rankings and all. The whole mindset there is you really have two options in life. You could either be a consultant or you can be a banker, and that's pretty much it. And like maybe some people could go off into marketing, but it was almost like a foregone conclusion. You could either go into banking or consulting, and that's it. And in that environment, you kind of get caught up in it, especially people who are kind of used to being overachievers and trying to be the best in whatever peer group they're in. And that's what I saw. I saw all of the best and brightest going toward banking and the finance world. And that's kind of where I drifted off into without giving enough thought to it. So that's how I ended up on Wall Street in investment bank the first year out of college. And it's such a strange thing. You like pick a career and you don't actually know what the hell goes on in that career. You have no idea what the job is like, what you do day to day. You have no idea.
It's true. There's absolutely no class in college that ever prepared me for any of the things that I started doing post-college. They all said that they were going to, and it was all complete bullshit.
Complete bullshit. I mean, they could definitely do a better job of it. I almost wish I had, you know, like some older mentors or anyone in my freaking fraternity could have come back and helped me out while we were partying at homecoming to just let me know, dude, make sure you want to do this line of work before you get into it. So I got into it and was so unbelievably miserable. We work like 90 hours a week. You're 22 years old and there was no creativity. All I did was like basically make beautiful looking Word documents for gigantic corporations to re-up their convertible, excuse me, their, I like blocked out all this terminology, these revolving credit facilities. It's like basically gigantic loans that big companies have in place that they never use, but they need to show Wall Street that they have access to capital at any time. And that's it. It was so unbelievably boring for 90 hours a week that I got fed up very, very quickly.
That would make me want to put an ice pick into my ear, yeah.
Right. No, but here's the problem. They pay you just enough to overcome the misery and make you want to stay there. And they do it perfectly. They calibrate it. God knows how they really know the exact number. But for a 22-year-old to make 100K first year out of school, and this is back in 2002, it was very hard to walk away. I got to the point where I was going to walk away no matter what. I even considered like leaving before my bonus hit, which is insanity looking back on it, but that's what I did. I could not stomach it and quit the hour that my bonus hit my bank account. That like slingshot effect, the crossbow being pulled all the way back on how miserable I was working for somebody else, has really given a lot of life and sustenance being shot out of that cannon, and that let me deal with whatever difficulty entrepreneurship brought my way, because I just knew how horrible the other side was, even if you're getting paid a lot of money. So it almost helped in some way in motivating, you know, once I got out of that situation.
Now, was this before you were married with kids, or were you still single at that point?
I was single in New York. Yeah, I got together with my wife in college. We took a little break, but then, yeah, I was single and miserable. You have no time for anything. You go out and you do what you think is cool in New York City, also known as spending a lot of money at like fancy places. And then
yeah.
And then you just go right back into the office on Sunday and work all day, and then Monday morning, and you get home at 11 o'clock at night, and like, I guess you feel kind of cool that you get to take a black car at the end of the night and fall asleep, you know, on the way home. It's like, it sounds glamorous from the outside, and then you get into it on the inside, and you're like, this is terrible. Now, some people love it. God bless them. It's just not for me.
Yeah. I have what I think is a pretty high-paying sales job. So it's a little bit different than your job on Wall Street, but looking at where I am now, and Podcast Motor is off to a great start, and we have a lot of traction. People, you know, like you. So you and Brian with Bootstrap Web are customers of Podcast Motor. I think it's going great. See the value in our service. And so I'm looking at, hey, when and how do I make the jump from leaving my, you know, good salary and two kids and a wife to support to doing this on my own full time? You know, Dave and I have talked about this a little bit before. You know, hey, it's when your income matches, you know, 80% of your actual day job income. Or you know, to walk us through a little bit of how you decided to make the jump, what you did beforehand, and some of those mechanics.
Yeah, my calculations, I don't know if they're applicable or right for everyone. All I can speak to is what I went through. I definitely don't want to be giving advice on this because everyone's situation is different. For me, it goes all the way back. I'm an immigrant from Israel. So my parents brought us over when I was 6 years old. And I grew up in a household watching my father start his own business and deal with the risks and the rewards that came with that. And so my mindset was pretty much made up. I then went to college and saw the path of banking and started to go into finance and all that. So that's like the background that's simmering on the back burner at all times. But my calculations were always, I want to make millions of dollars. What is the right path to do that as quickly as possible, if I'm going to be entirely honest?
And so you're optimizing for growth.
I'm just optimizing to get rich, to be entirely blunt and cynical and honest. That's what I think was the right approach for me, given where my priorities are. I want to make sure my family's taken care of. I want to make sure all this crazy journey of being an immigrant was almost like worth it. All these things mixed in, that's what I was optimizing for. How do I do this? How do I achieve financial independence and freedom? How's that, to put it in a nicer way?
I'm fine with it either way, because I'm definitely of the let's get stinking filthy rich. I mean, that's part of the reason I'm in business for myself.
Yeah, I think they're the same thing. Like taking care of your family, making sure you can contribute to things you want to contribute, getting rich, having nice stuff. It's all wrapped up in the same thing of whatever, financial freedom, being able to do whatever you want, whatever you want to call it. So that I was just optimizing for that. And I just came to the conclusion of what are the chances that someone is going to pay me a salary from their company in order to put me in a position to have sufficient money to be in that freedom type situation. I just didn't think it was likely that I was going to do that working for someone else. So I went on my own. That it was it. Now, looking back, going back to the alternate universe reality, if I had known what was about to happen to finance over the next 10 years after I quit, my optimization strategy may have been a little different, okay? That's part of the reality. And I almost see it as like a race where you can quit your job whenever you want, when you're at 0%, 80%, 100%, 200% of what your current salary is. But then you're almost in a race against your alternate reality. If you stayed here, you really need to make sure that the decision pays off, especially if you're going the entrepreneurship route with so much more risk. So you really want to do better financially than you would have if you had stayed at your job. There is no way I have achieved that. If I stayed in banking looking at my buddies who are like in private equity doing like $2 million a year, there's clearly no way that I achieve that. But then you start to get into the other side of things. It's not just about money. It's about freedom. It's about enjoying your life. It's about feeling good every day and not being miserable working for someone. It's about seeing your kids when you want and covering for your wife when she needs. I don't know. It's all the stuff that's mixed in. But that's kind of the harsh reality, is looking over at where you would be if you had stayed the course. And it gives you a lot of pressure to achieve on your own, you know, to do better than you would have if you'd stayed working for somebody else.
So is that still your goal, is to outperform where you would be if you had stayed in investment banking financially?
Yes and no. If you'd asked me a few years ago, I would have given a clear yes. Now it's so far away. You know, it's been 12, 13 years. Who knows what would have happened? It's almost like it doesn't matter. At this point, I just want to achieve my potential and whatever maximum that is. And then there's also the human element of – yes, I want to be at the upper end of my peers and my friends and the people around me. And I think that's just a realistic factor.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that something that is a big consideration for everyone that would listen to our show is, I don't want to say work-life balance because that's a terrible term, but achieving your financial goals while optimizing for time with your family and good quality time for your family and being, you know, rested and then mentally at peace when you get home at the end of the day or walk out of the office at the end of the day. I think that's, you were talking a little bit about, you know, I'm not going to get the salary from someone to be ultra wealthy. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, investment banking, there's definitely plenty of millionaires in high-end sales. There's plenty of millionaires just from doing a day job, but I'm experiencing it right now. You probably experienced it before, Dave. I'm sure you experienced it as well. They get their money's worth out of you. And when you come home at the end of the day and can just stare at the wall and have two or three glasses of wine before you feel normal again, that's not how we're supposed to live.
No, that is not optimizing for quality of life. And they certainly, yeah. I mean, I'm consulting for the financial services industry right now, so I know of this painful lack of balance that you speak, although the company that I'm working for actually is pretty good in that regard. But I've personally spoken with traders and guys who have done this in the past working for hedge funds. that 90-hour a week norm is it's a scary norm. You know, they do that day in and day out for years and years and years, and they somehow feel that it's worth it. I can't imagine living my life like that. I'm sure. Well, obviously you can't either, Jordan, and I can't. I know you can't either, Craig. But the whole craziness that goes behind that is, you know, driven by that that higher salary that they offer. I mean, they definitely it is almost impossible to compete with Wall Street if you are trying to hire a quant, for example, to do work for you to do data analysis, or if you want to hire somebody in IT. Wall Street's going to kick the crap out of you because they can offer so much more money, but they more than extract their value out of you based on how hard that they try to work you. So,
yeah, and rightfully so. I can acknowledge the logic of all of that, but I refuse to see it as justification for making less money on your own. So I think you need to demand both. You need to say, I'm going to have a normal existence and not work 90 hours a week, and I'm going to see my kids, but I'm going to use my brain and the distributional magic of the internet to achieve both, to A, make more money than I would have elsewhere and still have a normal life. And that's kind of what I demand of myself, and I think what a lot of people in our situations should demand of themselves. That looking sure. at a normal life and saying, okay, so what? So I make a lot less money than I would have, but I'm happier. And I think that's great, but we should also push at the same time to make even more money than we would have on top of being happier.
So let's put some numbers around that. How long have you been out of a day job?
13 years since I left.
13 years, okay. And I guess what is a fair expectation, or what are you seeing as like a percentage of your previous salary, or where you would expect to be now? Are you half? Are you 75% there?
No. I think it changes drastically depending on the type of business you're in. So the type of business I'm in right now, the value is sitting in shares of equity. And that's the only thing that's comparable to the $1 million+ a year that I would be making as a banker or private equity or hedge fund or something like that.
Okay.
So now that's different if you have a consulting company, if you have, you know, there are a million different types of business models. It just so happens that the type of business that we're building at Carthook is something that is something that can be grown and potentially sold in the future. And so that's the exit is the only possible way to compare yourself to what you could be making otherwise. Not in the salary. There's no way I would take a $750,000 salary, even if it could be justified. That kind of would hurt the company so much, and the company being hurt would hurt your equity value so much that it would be self-defeating.
Yep.
Yeah. Now,
so you pay yourself enough to be comfortable and reward yourself for all the hard work, but at the same time keep enough of or as much as the money in the business to let it grow and retain that equity in the business.
Yes. And I think that's the difference in working for yourself for someone else. When you work for yourself, you're not building up equity unless you're getting stock options and whatever else. But normally speaking, you're working for somebody else and building value in their company and being compensated in real time for it. Whereas as an entrepreneur, you are working and making less money up front, but the long-term asset that you're building is yours. And so the hope is that in the future, you'll be paid off handsomely, right? More so than you would have if you had built up the immediate cash flows of salary over that time period with an employer.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's jump back to the event 13 years ago when you shot out of the crossbow, as you so put it.
Oh, yes.
You must have been freaked out and relieved at the same time. So, you know, what was going through your mind when you started that plan? You know, what fears did you have about that process, and how did you sort of reconcile that and work through it? What were the first couple of years like for you?
I was so done and so convinced that it wasn't right for me. I at that point I didn't care. I was like, I don't care if I make less. I didn't care about anything. I just said, I'm out of here, or I'm going to turn into a monster and be miserable and not recognize myself, which is kind of where it was getting to only after a year. So for me, it was just worth it, period. And I was going to do it no matter what, even if I went and got, you know, any type of job. that's one thing. I was going to be happy no matter what I did, just to get out of there and kind of restart. What I did is jumped into the family business from there, and I basically made a deal with my father who owned the business. And we kind of worked it out like, okay, if I leave this job, what can we do? What can we expect? And we basically said, okay, if you want to come and join the family business, you need to add a certain amount of value, or it doesn't make sense. It's not charity here for you to join the family business. And so what can we expect? How much value can you create by coming here? And then how could we work backwards? Okay, let's get you a salary that's enough to cover your living expenses, and then you'll get paid out depending on how much value you create for the business, basically how much we grow the business in the way that we expect. And that was my transition. So I took like a month off to just kind of breathe and be normal again. And then I jumped into that, and I worked with him for 4 years, which helped me build up the capital to launch my first venture on my own, which was first a political website that failed disastrously and then transitioned into an e-commerce business that we built up and sold. And then that led into Cardhook.
That was a nice way for you to be able to exit with having something to, I don't want to say fall back to, but something to easily transition into that was already established. You could plug yourself into it, work hard, I'm sure, and be creative and add value to it. So what would your advice be to someone who doesn't necessarily have the connection to roll right into an existing business, be it family or not? What would your strategy be if you didn't have that, I guess?
Yes, I would say you're going to need more money than you think. It's going to take longer than you expect. It's going to be more painful than you thought it was going to be. So all these things that whatever your plan is, just look at the lower version, the worse off version of that plan, and then go a little lower than that and plan to survive that. What I would do going back if I didn't have the family business to join is I would just get into the industry that I wanted to work in and not care so much about the salary, just learn the industry. And that's, you know, in hindsight, that's what I should have done instead of going into banking, and it's what I should have done instead of going into the family business. And because I think being inside of an industry, being paid a salary from a company who's essentially letting you learn the industry is the best possible stepping stone to launching your own business in that industry. So that's what I would do. I would soften the transition instead of being immature. You know, I was pretty immature at that time and saying, F this, I just don't care at all. I'm quitting no matter what. I would say, let me take some time off. Let me save up some money, take some time off, and then get into the industry and optimize to learn the segment of the industry that I wanted to be in. And then from there, step away into your own business.
So let's talk about your specific timeline then. I mean, you were in your family business. I don't know what your family's business specifically was and how that doesn't relate to Cardhook, but
nope.
If you can maybe talk a little bit about how you kind of moved, you know, how long were you in the family business? And then when did you suddenly have this epiphany about, maybe e-commerce is where it's at. And, oh man, there's this big problem in e-commerce. How come nobody's fixed that? You know, how did you get to that?
Sure. So what I did, you know, I alluded to it before. In the family business, I just took a salary enough to live on. And everything else I deferred. And it was with the understanding that I knew I wanted to start my own business. And so let me work for a few years and not collect on that. Let's leave that in the business. Let's reinvest it. And let's kind of earmark it as like that's owed to me when I go start my business. And that was the deal I made with my dad. And so when I left, I basically took like 4 years worth of bonuses or dividends from the business and said, okay, now I'm going to use that as my startup capital. So it's the same thing as, you know, making more than you live on and saving, same type of thing. I'm just not good with saving because I like nice things.
It's a forced savings plan business.
It's all it was. It was just keep it here. I don't even want to see it. I'm happy with my life the way it is. I don't need a nicer X, Y, or Z. Let's just leave it in there because that's my bigger goal. That's better off. Yeah. So it's the same thing as saving up. If you had discipline, like I don't.
Sure. Okay. But you're working in the family business with your dad. And where did Cart Hook come out of this?
Oh, yeah. All right. I'll give you the short version, because the long version is just brutally embarrassing and horrible and whatever else. So I left. I started a passion type startup, which was a political website. And my plan was to basically curate opinion pieces, kind of like Real Clear Politics does. That's a big opinion site. And I was going to do it, everything online, everything curated, and then basically build out different verticals. So do the same thing for sports, politics, finance, just all these different categories that were basically the curated best of, you know, nowadays it's pretty commonplace, but back in 2002, it wasn't. Excuse me, not 2002. This is 2002 plus 4 years in the family business, so this is 2006. That didn't work at all. We got a bunch of vanity metrics. We got a bunch of traffic. We never learned how to make money from it. Overall, it was a pretty stupid business in general, because I did the whole let's build it first and monetize later thing, which is fine if you actually know what you're doing on how to monetize it later. I didn't, and so I didn't monetize it, and it ended up with basically saying, okay, let's call this a day and move on to the next thing. That's when the e-commerce business came up. My brother had started the e-commerce business, and he was kind of getting bored of it. So when I decided to drop the politics site, I basically said, hey, bud, you have this e-commerce thing. It's going kind of slow, but it's already up and running. Do you mind if I give it a try for a few months? That's how we started the e-commerce business, not some grand strategy on my part. The good thing is that worked. So we went from clueless $500 a month in revenue to like $65,000 a month in revenue in like 6 months, and then kept going, and then sold the e-commerce business after a year in business.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah, it was kind of a crazy ride, kind of learned along the way. What's the analogy of like building a race car as it's going, or building a train as it's on the tracks? That's what that felt like.
Okay.
Yeah.
That I would suppose that's where some of your advice of learn, you get in the industry you want and learn while getting paid comes from, right? I mean, you learned on the job in your e-commerce business.
Yes.
And now that's transitioned into everything you know probably that's about Cart Hook.
Exactly right. And that's where all the value is. So when I talk to potential customers, it's obvious within 10 seconds that I know what I'm talking about with e-commerce, because I used to run a store. And when I write something, when I give an interview about optimizing your checkout process, all this credibility, just even the idea for Cart Hook, right? I found it because I was using a similar product that was terrible, and it still made us a bunch of money. So the idea for Cart Hook came about by, after selling the business, looking at all the tools that we used and wanted to get into software, and identifying one tool that was A, terrible, and B, making us a lot of money. And that's where I saw opportunity. I said, hey, if I make a good version of that product, that will sell. And then once it sells, I know it makes money for people, so nobody will ever cancel. So that's where the whole idea came from. Would never have happened if I hadn't been in the industry. It's the same thing as if I'd gotten a job at an e-commerce agency and saw what everyone was dealing with and thinking about and talking about, it would be a much better position to launch a business from.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about this strategy a lot with, you know, talking to other people that are looking to make the jump from full-time salary job into whatever else. And I think, you know, an apprenticeship, like you might call it, or an internship in a large corporation or in a startup where you're not going to get paid beans, but you'll learn a lot more, is a really cool model. And the other one I would add is, you know, kind of the hybrid of that is to start something while you're still working, build it up, even if it's not going to make you a lot of money, and either sell it to get your seed capital or get it up to a decent run rate to where you might be able to survive on it while you kind of make the jump. But you've learned by doing for the last 6-8 months, 2 years, whatever it is.
Yes.
Sort of the Patrick McKenzie model. Mm-hmm. Although I wouldn't recommend going into bingo cards for anybody else.
Nope.
Yeah, so 12 years later, 13 years later, you know, your life is very different than it was before. You talk a little bit about some of the things you kind of reflect on now of your life from before, and what's some of the biggest differences?
When compared to that alternate life, it's not comparable. It's not A, it's so far in the past, and B, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and this is the only way that I would be okay with doing it. I just could not work for someone in the long term. I just couldn't do it. You know, it's not like some heroic thing. Maybe it's part of it is like thin skin and lack of discipline or patience or whatever you want to call it. I'm just not wired that way. I think a lot of people feel the same way. Maybe human beings aren't really wired that way in many ways. But the way I feel right now is I feel a mixture of, on one hand, feeling very lucky and blessed to have the family life that I have. I have a wife and two daughters, and we've traveled around a ton over the past 18 months before moving to Portland 9 months ago. We traveled around for 18 months, like a different city for a month or two, all over the place. We went to Berlin for a while. We traveled all over the U.S. and that part of it feels amazing. And then at the same time, I feel like I'm not done. I feel very unfinished. So I feel like I'm still sprinting on the treadmill to try to almost catch up to where I think I should be by now, and I'm not. And so it's like a race. You know, because when I remember being younger, I had all these unrealistic expectations. Like, okay, by 30, I'll be here. And by 35, I'll be there. And by 40, who cares? That's so far away. Who cares about 40? So now I'm 35. I'm not where I thought I would be at 30. And now I just want to hurry the hell up and get to where the vision in my head of what my life should be like and feel like. I'm just trying to get there, trying to match that.
So speaking of looking back, would you say that you have any regrets about the way that you handled it, or the way that you jumped, the way that you've migrated since? You know, you keep talking about looking back in the alternate universe. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I find it hard to answer that without just listing off like 100 regrets.
Everybody's got regrets. Sure,
right. Everyone's in the same boat.
But let's say, okay, regrets? You get to jump in a time machine. Yes. The DeLorean pulls up in front of Jordan Giles' home. And you know, Professor – what the hell's his name? Professor Brown steps out and he's like, quick, we got to go back. And you can go back. You jump in the time machine and then you're like, okay, I can do this over. What would you do different?
Okay, so let's get away from the day-to-day, like, we should not have integrated with Magento just yet sort of thing, right? That's pointless. Going back in the time machine, I think the big themes, the things that would really have a big divergent effect on the path are not going to Wall Street chasing the highest salary among your friends sort of thing. I really should have gone to work for a small company in a space, an industry that I liked, and actually seen what it's like and what it takes, because I had to learn all that the hard and painful way, instead of being much more familiar with it and knowing what to expect and what challenges are normal. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? It's one of these, if I had better math terminology, it's one of these things that once the decision is made, the effect, the difference in the paths become greater over time. So I think you got to go as far back as possible to change these certain decisions that I regret that would have a much bigger impact now. So A, going off to a small business or a startup very early on in the career instead of the giant megacorp, getting so frustrated by it, running to the family business, and instead of that path. And then the second thing is the first business that I launched, I wish it had been a more classic revenue-driven model instead of the build it and monetize later, because I think that just led me down, A, a waste of a year, B, a waste of money over that year, and then C, it led me into the e-commerce opportunity that was just in front of me instead of going after an opportunity that I thought was the absolute best opportunity to take at that time. So those are the big ones. The type of job to get out of school, I would not have gone and started a business out of school. I mean, good luck if you want to do that. I don't think that would be right for me. And second of all, the first business that I did launch on my own, that it was very straightforward B2B business model I think those two decisions would lead to my life being very different for the better.
You know, I think that the advent of podcasting and the amount of free information available to anyone who has this inkling in their gut would lead them to avoid at least one of those mistakes or errors before, right? I think anyone who's listening to this show, would listen to y'all's show, would listen to Startups for the Rest of Us, would say, I'm going to do something that has a chance of standing on its own and being successful right from the get-go. I'm not going to start a blog. I'm not going to do some of these things that really don't have an end game in mind. And I think that's great. And I hope that in the next 5 years, we'll see a lot more successful, small, or even big, you know, entrepreneurial companies that are founded by first timers. I think the amount of information out there is lending itself to people being very successful right off the bat.
Yeah, I have to agree. The amount of information and how much better it's been just over the past 2 years. You know, it used to be Tim Ferriss comes out with 4-Hour Work Week and it opened up millions of people's eyes at once. Like, wait a minute, this type of efficiency, this is possible. Now that type of book, that type of information is the norm. It's everywhere and you see examples of it. And I love being inspired by successful people's examples. And these days we get full interviews of exactly how they did it and where they are and how much money they make. And that's, you know, Mixergy, that I wish I had gotten addicted to Mixergy instead of the podcast that I did get addicted to back in the day that kind of glorified the whole VC raise money game. I genuinely think it would make a big difference, and it will make a big difference on a lot of people.
So let's talk about the buyout again. I get the feeling that, do you plan on a sort of strategic exit for CartHook, and or do you think it is the thing, the event that will make your journey to be considered a success in your mind?
No, I think all of that, like seeing a big buyout, big acquisition, millions of dollars at the same time, it's all kind of that same immature type view on it that I used to have back in the day that I still have inklings of. I think the realistic best outcome is to build a business that is very profitable and does not require my 24-hour-a-day commitment. And that freedom, the ability to generate $10, $20, $50, $100,000 in excess income every month will open up doors and opportunities that can lead to much bigger things than what I have in mind right now. So the goal for CartHook is to figure out who the right customer is, how to acquire them, and then how to service them so that they're making so much money that A, they never leave us, and B, we can continue to charge more and more money and add additional services and products and these types of things that reverberate back to the company in the form of obscene profits, right? I'd love a company of under 10 people that makes $500,000 a month and just throws off giant wads of cash. In that situation, the exit, somebody buying the business becomes, all right, if somebody comes along and offers enough money that you have to say yes, fine, you say yes. But I think going about it and trying to build a very profitable business is much better off. Because then if somebody doesn't come along to buy the company, you don't care nearly that much. With that much money being spit out, you can create other companies, you can invest in other companies. I mean, I have a lot of horrible, dirty thoughts for businesses that I can't pursue right now because I need to work on this business. I can see a situation where a few years from today, with the business running on its own, with employees in place, with systems in place, and I have excess capital, I can pursue some of those dirty dreams.
This is a family-friendly show.
I kept the family.
Hell, it's not. They... For God's sakes, do you not remember two episodes ago when everybody was dropping the F-bomb when we were all drunk out in Vegas?
Oh, that's right. I wish I was there for that. I would love to watch that.
You know, we wanted to, so Ken and I actually had this vision that we were going to do like 4 episodes at MicroConf. And so we got, you know, we got 2 guys out there and we got one of them in and we're like, damn, this is fun. Let's go for another one. So we did another one and we got that out there. And the next night we're like, yes, let's do it again. And then that was the night that it was the dust storm. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. was a crazy night. So, right.
And we were doing the interviews outside, and it was like a much quieter area, and they were actually switching where the venue or the party would have been. So everybody ended up inside. We couldn't go back outside. And, you know, I would have just kept on doing that because that was fun having those conversations. I've already told Craig that when he goes to MicroConf Europe, he needs to go find a quiet room somewhere and then just start dragging people off for these half-hour conversations and have a great time. So,
yeah, absolutely. I can't wait.
All right. So speaking of controversial, let's get your opinion on something here, Jordan.
Sure.
If you were to start over on all of this – you know, you're getting back in the time machine again with Professor Brown. Would you even go to college?
Ooh, that is controversial.
Dun, dun, dun.
So I got effectively, I don't want to say no value out of my college education. By far the largest piece of that value, whatever I got out of college, was that was a good time. It was a really, really good time. But second of all, the network and friends and experience. The actual education is really hard to justify the price on. So I think about this now because I have a 3-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old. So I think, will I have the stomach to accept if they come to me and they say, Dad, I'm 17 years old. I have decided I don't want to go to the University of Michigan. I'm going to go to Ohio State. No, just kidding. They would never do that.
No, they wouldn't betray you like that, would they?
Never.
Never.
So if they came to me and said, I don't want to go to a normal college. I want to go to this tech academy that's 18 months long, and that's it. And then I'll learn how to program, and they have all these different things. I don't know how I'm going to react to that. It's still ingrained in our minds, the credentials required for life that a big university gives you. But I don't think it's worth it, especially not the value of it will continue to decrease moving forward. So I would go to college, but that's in 1998 making that decision. I don't think there was the right alternative for me. I can see how in the future that might be different.
All right. So Jordan, you and I are the same age, and we have similar age kids. I have a 2- and 4-year-old, and I would say the same thing, but I told my wife last night, I said, I hope our kids don't go to college and never have a job.
Yeah.
I would feel like a successful parent. And I think the difference is
if they're
you and I have
on your couch eating Captain Crunch all day, you're not going to feel like
smoking weed.
Parent.
Yeah, right. No, but here's why. 2 years ago, I would never have said that, and I think the difference is the thought I have about the ownership of my time and the direct potential of my income and my, you know, sort of feeling of success from the things I do every day is skewed now because I'm in this startup entrepreneurial world to the point where I don't want my kids to get caught in that rat race. I don't want them to spend maybe the best 4 years of their life wasting, at least from an educational standpoint, wasting their time. I think college is a great social time, but I don't think it's a good, and it's not a great use of your time and money for education. To the point where I think, you know, we're considering homeschooling our kids to take it one step further and start that road now to where you can say, you know, I don't know if you guys listened to Bootstrap with Kids. Brecht is homeschooling their kids, they're driving around the country for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, if you got that started at age 6, what would your 18-year-old look like? And if they got to spend 2 years in Prague with you, I mean, that would be like a Jason Bourne kind of kid. I mean, I think about that kind of stuff from the
– I don't want my kids to grow up to be assassins. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but they would be badasses in a lot of sense.
They would be cultured.
They would be smart. They would be sensitive. They would be mindful. They could be very athletic, and I think there's a lot of infrastructure getting built into the things around education to where even public schooling before college – is going to change drastically.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think it's harder to do than in theory, and especially you need two people on board. It's not just you, right? It's you and your spouse if you're married. And I mean, it's hard. You can't deny that that you're onto something there, right? We look at college and we see that as optional. But then if you just work your way down and you look at high school, that's kind of a disaster too. The normal standard public high school that we think of in the US, that does not maximize the education. And anything to give your kids an upbringing that shows them anything beyond just here are my five friends in high school and how do I maximize my popularity and how do I like care about what other people think of me and how they hurt me and where I stand and how ashamed of this stuff. All that stuff is just not good. It's not healthy for kids. And it's not necessary by default. You can change it. I hope I have the balls to make a lot of these hard decisions that you know that you're talking about. I don't know how that's going to shake out for us, but it's something to think about all the time.
Yeah, I'm a little fortunate that my wife is a in that respect is a hippie liberal, and she pushes a lot of those things on my very, you know, conservative upbringing. But yeah, I think it's and it's just interesting to think that us in these shoes are thinking these things. Think about the person who's starting a family that's 25. You know, what are they going to think, and how is their perspective different just with 10 years on? I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great conversation, and yeah, Bootstrap with Kids talked about it, and I think Sherry and Rob Walling talked about raising entrepreneurial kids. Yeah, I'm at the very
least.
They
homeschool as well. Just
do they
to
homeschool?
Sort of bring that full suit.
Yeah,
full,
that's right.
Full circle. Yeah,
that's right.
And
I know,
yeah, I mean,
I know how.
True.
Yeah, there are a lot of people. It depends on how you grow up in the home and your relationship and thinking about money. It's very tied into what we're talking about. People who are sheltered from money growing up and don't think about it or have to worry about it, in some ways the parents are doing them a favor, and at the same time they're doing them a huge – they're setting them up for a burden for not understanding how money in the business world works if they shield them from it too much.
Yeah, I think it's a responsible conversation to have. Cool. Well, Jordan, thanks so much for hopping on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me on. Yeah, we are loving the Podcast Motor service. And we just talked about, before the show about a new podcast that I'm thinking about launching. So all these services, I love all these little niches that we're all just carving out. And there's like no such thing as too small of a niche. Like setting a podcast a few years ago seemed like too small of a niche. It is no longer that. Recovering abandoned carts for e-commerce stores is, you know, it seems pretty trivial and pretty small, but it's not. It's as we move forward and the internet kind of does its thing, it just gets more highly specialized and highly developed. It's a lot of opportunity.
Well, we're looking forward to see great things from you and Cart Hook in the near future here, Jordan.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. See you guys.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.